What's happening, boys? How are we?
Good evening.
Are we all good? Well, we wait 2 minutes to make sure that people can actually hear us because we're live to YouTube as our standard and customary introduction to YouTube.
I'm looking at the levels. I can see spikes when I talk. And when you talk, Tam, if you want to speak into the microphone like a big boy, and we'll test yours.
Hello.
Right, we're good.
Yeah, well, that'll have to do.
First time we've ever done a sound check on the pod. We're getting professional here, boys. So that's good.
Okay. Oh, God.
Well, hello, everybody. A bit of a random day for podcasting, but it's been busy. A midweek game always throws us, so we'll go over Dundee. We probably have to talk about Spartans as well, won't we?
Try and avoid it if we can, but yeah, if we have
then... We'll review some of the games that have been, and then we'll talk about tomorrow. I don't know about you boys, but I have tomorrow's game firmly in the biggest game of the season so far category. I don't know if you'll feel any different. So we'll go through all that, then we'll go through some Hearts headlines, whole host of people signing, potentially signing, might be signing, could be leaving. We've got loads of January transfer window nonsense. And then we've got Tam down as well.
We do.
Sound good, boys?
Sure does.
Sounds good to me.
Nice. Well, thanks to everybody that joined us today live on YouTube. Get your questions in. Anything you want to talk about, we'll try and cover. I'll try and keep an eye on it myself as well, because we know how good Tam is at looking at all that stuff.
There we go.
But anyway, Tam, what's been happening? How are we?
Good mate. It's nice to join you on a Friday night. Although I'm missing the final of Traitors. I don't know if you guys watch this, but what a program.
I'm not that guy. I think the last television series I watched was like Gladiators, but when Wolf was in it. I think we had that chat in the community chat, didn't we?
that needs firmly stopped again. Like.
That was like the last time I watched TV. Like.
Fair.
Ando, what's been happening?
Not much, man. Just the usual. Not going to bore everyone to death with it, but I feel like I've been locked in this cell for ages and ages and ages just working away. But that's the tough part of January. But, aye. I'm going to worry about it too much.
Through January, thank God.
I know.
Payday today was much
coming.
It was long coming. Like,
it's a pain though, because it turns us all into Millionaires Weekend. So,
well, starting tomorrow, so I'll be popping champagne and Lucky's tomorrow. Like,
get a curry kebab pie there? We shoot that one in.
Very, very strange, and I don't know where it's came from, but Lucky's has got like a Thai restaurant in it or something. It's actually weird as anything. It's absolutely.
Can you imagine Corbett's backside after he has a kebab pie? It'll be an explosion, like a Jackson Pollock.
The toilets in Lucky's are not allowed to be used as toilets either. The Thai restaurant sells salt and pepper cocaine. That is what that is. Anyway, cool. Right, what do you want to talk first? Well, since it was a while, but we'll cover it because we got Airdrie in the next round. We've had some real inside knowledge there. Tam and the manager of Airdrie assured us it was a Friday night kickoff live on BBC. So it was good to see a Sunday 5 o'clock kickoff. Tam, what did you make of that?
I don't know what you're talking about, wasn't it me? But Sunday 5 o'clock is good. I quite like that, to be honest. How much is there? They've got like a 10,000 seater, don't they?
Aye, they were part of they were the cannon fodder of the folks that had to go and build 10,000 seater stadiums for their 400 fans or whatever it is. So we'll probably get maybe 5,000-6,000 tickets potentially.
Too bad.
Is it the Excelsior Stadium, is that right?
Aye, what a shite name, innit?
Well, there we go. That's our YouTube money gone. One fell swoop.
Damn it.
To be honest, if you can't say that word with Airdrie in the same sentence, what hope have you got? You're like,
we'll do it. Well, Steve Banks it in post. It's fine. I'm actually recording this one so we can upload it properly. So yeah, we'll be good. Don't worry.
So Spartans was weird because I kind of I think I said in the community chat the other day, I was at Dundee, as in I was at the Dundee game, and although not absolutely infused with how we played, was actually never apoplectic with rage. I wasn't at Spartans, watched it on TV, and could have kicked my TV's C-U-N-T in because I was so unbelievably livid. But when I spoke to the boys that were at Spartans, they were like, honestly, Corbett, it was like a training game. We waited until like the 90th minute to put it to bed. He's like, but I could have played for 120 minutes or whatever. Hearts were never going to lose that game. It was defence versus attack for 94 minutes or whatever. So what was your take on the game, Tam, watching it for the house?
To be honest, I was at the house, as you say, and I was roughly the same. I was like, this is boring, first of all. I was just like, it's possession. Obviously, their keeper probably had the game of his life, in a sense. There's plenty of decent saves in there. I think watching him, it was more a surprise because he didn't look like...
Me and you have got a chance of playing that ball. He's a keeper, like.
But fair play to him, and he was brilliant, to be fair. And yeah, I suppose it's just a pity it took so late in the game to win it. But and the boy that scored the goal for them, that was a bit of peach as well, to be honest.
It was offside, but it was a bit of a peach. Ando, what was your takes on the game?
Frustration, I think, is the main one. Just because, I get Roy the Rovers, Romance of the Cup, all these phrases should be consigned to the bin. And I hate it whenever anyone talks in those terms, but we should be going out and absolutely hammering teams like that. I get it's the first day back after the winter break, all that nonsense, but I'm expecting to see a 2, a 3, a 4 and a 0. Like 2, 3, 4, nil. We shouldn't certainly be losing a goal. It doesn't matter how good it is or it's offside or whatever. It feels, again, like I've covered in shows before, almost like an accidental win. Now, I know you can say we were never in any danger of losing it, but it doesn't matter for me. There's ways to win, and that, for me, wasn't convincing enough.
I'm almost in the opposite camp, but no, I share your sentiment, but again, when you rewatch it and you get through, you always get the sort of, as we always say, you know, history belongs to the winner, etc. You get to dictate how it goes. We absolutely battered them the whole game. But you're playing against 10 behind the ball, plastic pitch, windy, yep, rubbish, all that sort of stuff. Also not got Shankland. So, but I thought they stuck to the task, all right. I think that they struggled. They kind of even said that. Sorry, Stephen A. Smith spoke about it pretty well after the game. They spoke about the fact that it was a bit of a slog, and we'd kind of said before the game, didn't let it turn into a slog, try and put it to bed, and we never really done it. And it was the same way. It was the same on Tuesday too, with Dundee about taking chances. So I was, now that we've dodged the bullet and we've made it through, I suppose you look at the positives. I thought, you know, Vargas gets another goal, which is okay. Frankie Kent finally scores with a header. He's about 9,000 of them. And as much as it has annoyed me that their goal is, one, an absolute raker, but two, it's so clearly offside that I'm like, how the hell did the ref or linesman no see that? So what's your thoughts, Paul Bearer, on Airdrie? What are you thinking?
I was hoping that comment would be sort of just glazed over, but that's fine. Thanks.
I've just seen the one above it, and I'm laughing my ass off. It's great.
What did you ask? Airdrie, sorry, I just took it to personal there. I think it's a favourable draw. Tough in a sense. They do like to play football, but I think it'll suit us that they like to play football rather than having 11 men behind the ball and us try to break that down. If Airdrie try and sort of come and play the game they've been playing in the Championship this year, it might open gaps, and it could be something that we could take advantage of. But if they do sit behind, it'll be another one of those. And it is another plastic pitch, I believe, as well. So that's great.
I know, that's what I was going to say next. That is another plastic pitch. Although we do, Touchwood, have a pretty decent record this season in plastic. Beat Kilmarnock twice on it, beat Livingston on it, beat Spartans, so obviously Airdrie will beat us. Now that I've highlighted that. Ando, what's your thoughts on the next round of the cup?
I don't know. Tam clearly has been given a debrief because he knows the manager of the team. But I'll just say, listen, they're barely in the top half of the championship. We should be dismissing them, Neighbour. It should be one of these ones. Go along, brush them aside like they're nothing. But perhaps we don't do it that way.
There will be people that are over the age of 30 in here remembering quite vividly that Airdrie are our bogey team.
And like, I'm one of them. I'm old enough to remember that. But it's a different Airdrie. It's completely different. Completely different. So they're going to make it tough. Obviously, any team like that, when you're playing them at home on a plastic pitch, Scottish Cup, all the stuff that annoyed me why we didn't absolutely swat it. We'll call them Edinburgh City there. Spartans aside, it'll be the same thing we need to watch out for. It's copy and paste, basically, but these guys will just be slightly better.
What did the Airdrie Stadium used to be called before it was called the...
Was it Broomfield?
Broomfield,
or
is that Falkirk?
No, that's Brockville. You get Broomfield, and then there was New Broomfield, I think. But it is weird because there's been so many teams called Airdrie. Airdrie Onions Mark 1, Airdrie United, or whatever the hell it was, and then you've got Airdrie Onions Mark 2. This team, I don't know if we've technically ever played them before. Because there's a version of Airdrie.
Airdrie Great Again flag at Tiny.
There's a version of Airdrie that was formerly Clyde Bank or some daft thing like that to do with it, like the club registration just being sold or whatever. But anyway, that's a rabbit hole we don't need to go down. That's one for a view from the terrace.
Broomfield became a Safeway in 1994. There you go.
So it's New Broomfield.
Must be that.
Nice. Oh well, like I said, you're looking at all the teams that we could have had, and it's probably a favourable draw, isn't it? You got to hope. And then what's that put us? One win away from Hamden again. Celtic or Rangers in Glasgow or something like that, just to make sure that doesn't happen again. But I thought it was decent. Right, let's talk Hearts headlines then. It's been in true Hearts fashion. You go. Absolutely nothing happens in the transfer window, and then in the space of a few days, almost pretty much everything. So we'll start with, actually, I think James Forrest was the first Hearts player to be announced as extending his stay at Tynecastle to 2026, wasn't it?
No, it was his brother Alan, mate. But
close. Oh, did I say James?
He did.
Jeez.
That's annoyed me. Why would I talk about him?
I didn't even notice as well.
You definitely said James.
Probably. Well, Alan Forrest signed and stayed to 2026. Not against it, I'll be honest with you. I actually felt that we struggled without him on Tuesday. So when he came back, when he came on Tuesday, I felt that it made a difference to Hearts. You've known this for ages. I've spoke about Alan Forrest and how Robbie Nielsen sucked the life out of him last season. You know, he started the season pretty well, scored like 4 goals in 6 or 7 games, and then became a bit of a player for Barry McKay, fading in and out of being useful and useless as he does. So, no complaints. No complaints with that. Then, I believe we signed Dexter Lembakisa.
That's it.
Dexter. We'll talk about his performance on Tuesday. His 10-15 minutes at Spartans was impressive, and I think he followed that up on Tuesday. So he looks like a pretty decent signing, which is good. Then Halkett signed his extension to 2026. Whoever decided that it wasn't a penalty, it was a free kick, hadn't intervened, I probably would have been apoplectic with rage after that sequence of events, because that was shambolic, wasn't it?
Aye, let's put it down to rustiness after the injury, I hope.
70 minutes into a game.
Yeah, maybe that. I'm just trying to be nice here. I don't know.
It was a shocker. It was an absolute shocker. But yeah, I think it makes sense. My only worry is he's got to prove himself now to stay fit. We've said that before. He needs he's running a team where he can keep himself fit, so we can see the best out of him. Because there is absolutely no doubt that when he's fit and on it, he is one of our top performers. So it's good to see him as well. And then obviously now we're talking sort of rumours. I think Joe Savage in the club spoke that Gordon and Benny are the next people that they're hoping to try and tie down in deals. Obviously, the elephant in the room is that Shankland still hasn't signed, but both Gordon and Benny are out of contract in the summer, so we'll talk about those ones first. Any issues with either?
Tam, you go first.
Gordon, no. Benny, on his day, is our best midfielder, but we don't need him anymore. We've got McCauley Tate. Just leave it at that.
It's a coin. Fine on everything else, but for Benny, it's a coin flip for me. Heads is brilliant, tails is terrible. And that I can't be dealing with. What I would like to have seen would be to have a couple of months out of him before we even have to have that chat and offer him a new contract. Obviously, circumstances being what they are, I mean that's not possible. I think I would rather err on the side of caution and have him, because when he is good, he is really good, and we'd probably struggle to find a replacement for a decent price. Then similar with touching on the Alan Forrest thing, is that Alan Forrest is great. There's definitely a player in there, and it could be worth a fortune. It could be the next best thing if he could just, let's say, tune in on absolutely everything. But I think if you didn't offer him a new contract and he hadn't signed, I'd be gutted if he'd left. And the school of thinking for now for Benny and Alan Forrest is, I would rather have them than not.
Well, I was going to say, my next thing is, I always look at these things as actually, if they left and signed for Aberdeen or Hibs or Kilmarnock, or would I be annoyed about it? And probably for all three of them, I would. Right this very second, I would say.
Definitely.
I wouldn't like any of them. So Gordon's a no-brainer. I think he'll be at the club to move into coaching roles, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, I think that's a no-brainer. Benny, on his day, is you can't, if he ever got to those heights, we'd be watching £4 or 5 million worth of player leave for nothing, which I don't think is the right thing to do. So I think as well that we're talking about Finlay Pollock, we're talking about McCauley Tate, we're talking about Aidan Denham coming in and performing well. Well, they train day in, day out with guys like Benny and Hoff and Haring and all these players that are probably teaching them the game and walking them through games and all that sort of stuff. So the impact, you know, when you look at the young players that we've had come through in that area of the park and they've made absolutely no impact. You know, folks say, oh, it's the youth, it's the academy, it doesn't work and all that. But also look and think, well, who have we had playing midfield for us? Do you know what I mean? Like, we've seen someone posted in the community chat today the lineup for the last time Aberdeen beat us at Tynecastle, and it's a hanging nightmares. Do you know what I mean? And you're like, well, actually, we haven't had any decent players in there for ages. And then obviously now I'm best pals with Cammy Devlin as well. So, you know, we've got him to come back, the greatest player to ever play for Hearts. So, I wouldn't be upset with Benny.
Damn, can you make a note to, like, tell Cobb's missus to stop dosing his tea or coffee with whatever she's putting in it, because it's no right. Like, I feel worried for
him. Wait till we lose tomorrow.
It's just because Cammy Devlin signed his lunchbox, man. He's on his good
place. Okay, it was the greatest day of my life. Derek Ferguson and Halliday signed my lunchbox on Open Goal, and then at Cammy Devlin at the lunch or whatever it was, the plot ceremony. So I'm having a great time. Right, might as well talk about it since it's not going away and it's still here. Lauren Shankland, the club, should I say, are in contract talks with him. And anybody got anything they would like to say on it? Do you think that's a good idea, bad idea? Do you care? Is it that you keep laughing at all the Rangers media losing their minds? What's your thoughts on it, Dan?
In some ways, I just didn't want to talk about it because I'm well and truly sick of the whole media aspect of it that Rangers need to sign on. But I honestly have, I don't believe Rangers even are interested at the point in spending the money we'd need for someone of his age. In terms of the contract talks, if the club are serious about it, they really need to just push the boat out because Hearts at the moment without Lauren Shankland are not in the position they would be. We'd be looking like we were Aberdeen or Hibs or any of the teams we're enjoying
scored
their
five goals in the last two games with five different scorers.
Fair point. But
I'm only kidding on. I'll say okay. Relegation fodder without Lauren Shankland. Let's no joke about.
Write the checkbook, give him everyone he wants, to be honest, but I know that's not sensible as well.
What are you thinking, Ando?
So, let's be honest, we're all worried about them going to Rangers. I don't think that's a thing we need to worry about at all because Rangers they would need to take a Provi loan to be able to buy Shankland. They can't afford it. They're potless, right? So park that. He's not going to Rangers in this window, end of. If someone puts a new contract down in front of you, it depends on the terms of the extension. So if it was like a 2-year extension or whatever, and he's going to get a decent uplift, you also then have to think about, right, well, if you're the player, if I sign this deal, right, well, it's locking me in for 3.5 years, fine, not the end of the world. But he's got the Euros to come, he's putting himself in the shop window. If he goes to the Euros, absolutely smashes it in, he smashes it for us for the rest of this season. God knows what he even does in the first 6 months of, or the first half of next season. When we get to a year's time, if he has continued scoring at the rate he's scoring, he's then made himself a multi-million pound player. Then, in which case, someone from England will come chapping and say, right, we'll pay the fee for him. Everyone wins. It's not in his interest not to sign that contract for me. I don't see why he wouldn't. Then, other than the fact that he wants to scurry along the M8 in 18 months' time. But even then, that's such a short-sighted thing to do for a player of his calibre. He's better than Rangers. We all know it.
I don't even think he does want to scurry along. I don't think that... Would he go there? I think he would, yeah. He's obviously, like, we would go to our boyhood heroes or whatever.
Funny talks.
I think Hearts fans need to calm themselves a wee bit and remember that when we signed Lauren Shankland, we held the power. You know, he was in Belgium. He didn't like it. His family didn't like it. He wanted home, etc., etc. So he had agreed to, you know, maybe the wage that he did, and then very little in terms of the contract, in terms of selling percentages, agent fees, buyout clauses, sell-on fees, all this stuff that bores people to death. But they're the things that matter for players like that. So we held all the cards, so to speak, when we signed them. Now he holds all the cards because he is now insanely valuable to Hearts, both from a transfer fee perspective, but also the value in his goals. You know, if he leaves and we don't finish third, then, you know, we watch £5 to £8 million worth of money leave on the back of him as he leaves. So that now triggers things like not just the weekly wage. I think everybody pays maybe a wee bit too much attention to weekly wage, you know, saying, oh, whether it's 4,000, 6,000, 8,000, 12, whatever it is, it will be like, right, well, what's our Hearts might be saying, sign the contract on X amount a week, and they might say, right, cool, I'm happy with that wage. But they might say, we want the sell or release clause to be 10 million. And Shankland might say, well, no, because I don't think anybody's ever going to pay 10 million pounds for me, so I'm going to be stuck here. Whereas 5 million is maybe more realistic for Shankland, they say, but you know, maybe someone from down south will come, because you think 10 million makes them instantly our highest ever transfer fee, more than Craig Gordon. He's 28, 29. So there's loads of different factors that will be at play. Then he'll also be saying things like, well, actually, if we're talking millions for release clauses, I want 25% of the sell-on fee or whatever it may be. And then Hearts might be saying, right, okay, cool, well, we want 25% of your, if there's any potential sell-on fees. You know, if he goes to England and smashes it and moves for Sunderland up to, a team coming into the Premier League, a Bournemouth or wherever, for millions. So it's convoluted. My thing would be that all the noises that we've heard coming from Hearts, I said this, I don't know if we've podcasted since then, but obviously...
No, we haven't.
I was on, obviously, on Open Goal, the fan forum. I spoke after the recording to Halliday and Derek Ferguson for ages. Halliday talking about how much Shanklin loves it at Hearts. Obviously, spoke to Cammy Devlin as well, talk about how much he loves it at Hearts. I've spoken to Hearts about different things, and they've said, you know, that we're not selling Shanklin, not going anywhere this transfer window, especially not along the M8. So I'd say let's just wait and see. Let's wait and see where we go. I think Shanklin is doing the right thing. He's in no rush. He's got 18 months left, this contract. If he was desperate to go to Rangers, he'd have to be an absolute idiot not to realise that they want him. You know, so he could easily just go chap the manager's door and say, by the way, I'm not playing. I want to go to Rangers, so I'm not playing until you enter negotiations or leave or whatever. And that pretty much is what Kyle Lafferty did by the end. You know, pretty much chapped the door to say, look, I'm going to Rangers, to the point I've told you before, he was sitting in the car park at Murray Park with his boots waiting for the deal to go through. He was supposed to be at Hearts training, went to Rangers, was like, I'm not coming back to Hearts, so hurry up and get the deal done type thing. So I think we've just got to be patient. I think we hear rumours of good news coming our way, so hopefully it's pretty soon. Transfer fees, or transfer rumours, so to speak. With Scott Fraser, looked like a done deal on loan, and then Charlton sacked their manager. So he was at the game on Tuesday. I'm not sure if that persuades him that he definitely wants to come here, or if he was up the road by 35 minutes into the game when we're 2-0 down, thinking, nope, not for me. And then the other one, we've got a couple of rumours of pre-contract stuff, obviously Danda and now Phillips from St Johnston. Do we have any views on any of them, Tam? What's your thoughts?
You're on mute, Tam.
Brilliant.
I don't know how I was muted. Yeah, it's interesting that they're all midfielders. We just spoke about Benny's day and young boys coming through. I know obviously Fraser and Danda are a bit further forward than Phillips. But it's interesting. I think they're all three of them. I don't know it, to be honest with you, actually. I'm not saying all three of them. Fraser, I don't even remember him playing up here. And I can't say I've watched any League One in England ever in my life. So no idea much about him. But Danda and Phillips, they've both impressed when we've played County St Johnston. So I wouldn't be against either of those happening, to be honest.
I think the players, Ando, he's obviously looking to bring players that can carry the ball forward, if you know what I mean. Like, obviously, we've seen for a while, and what we were most impressed with Macaulay Tate and Denham so far in their fledgling Hearts careers is the fact that they are a bit more adventurous. They'll turn and face the opposition goalkeeper. They'll pass the ball into forward areas rather than sort of the safe pass. So, any thoughts on them or any takes?
If I'm being brutally honest, I don't know enough about them in depth to be able to say, well, yeah, enough. I will say it because you know what my default position is. I don't think anyone we sign is ever good enough. They're always crap until they prove themselves otherwise. Danda, I'm least enthused about. This just seems to be recency bias, I think. Like, he scored a crackery free kick against us, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, the pants are off, and we're chucking him at Tom Jones on the stage. It's not for me. He's just not for me. The boy Fraser, I'll be perfectly brutally honest, don't know enough. Not done my homework on it. And then the boy for St Johnson, I could be convinced on that one. But, yeah, Danda, not for me. Fraser's a question mark. The other boy, a question mark, but leaning toward a thumbs up.
Talking about
I do like is all three have experience in the league. We've seen with the signings we had in the summer. They've took a wee while to settle. Took a while to get a tune out of any of them in some cases. So, yeah, I like that.
Talk of recency bias, like, McEwen, was it 17, played for Dundee on Tuesday, was unbelievable. Brilliant. He absolutely ran the show. So if we're just signing on players that have played well against us, let's get him, because he was really good. Obviously, some other rumours kicking about as well. We've got a supposed interest in Alex Cochran. I've said it many times on here. I will continue to say it. Outside of Lauren Shankland, Alex Cochran is Hearts' best player for me.
Second.
I absolutely adore Alex Cochran. And I don't know if it was a direct quote from Naismith or whatever, or if it's come, but it's, you know, if we sell Alex Cochran for £2 million, I will literally riot. Like, no, let's be serious. He's worth more than £2 million. And obviously the rumour of Kenny Vargas and is making his loan deal permanent. Again, just rumours, so won't really, no point in commenting then at that until it's a bit more concrete. But
I like how everyone got their calculator out, trying to work out how much Costa Rican dollars is.
Million FIFA says this or whatever it is. Like, what? But aye, we'll wait and see. We'll wait and see what happens. Because again, Kenny Vargas, like Alan Forrest, has come on to a bit of a game. So it'll be interesting to see if he plays and how he plays tomorrow as well. Any other Hearts news that we've not spoke about?
Don't think so.
It's quite a lot, surprisingly, for quite
a like I said, we normally nothing happens and then suddenly everything happens and you're like, what? Cool. Right. Well, what do you want to do now? Do you want to do a tam down? Or do you want to talk about Dundee since it's most recent?
Let's do the tam down.
Let's go for it.
Go for it. Right. Okay, cool. So I'm not going to tell you the date. I'm not even going to tell you the season. I'm going to tell you roughly when it is. I'm going to tell you the game and the score, and you'll have to get it from that. So, Tam, hands and heads. Heads, like you've got two. Head.
2 seconds. I'm just going to move the comments off.
Good. Okay, cool. Right, so this is... I've made it fairly recent, so it's in Tam's memory. So there shouldn't really be any trouble with this one. But it's still going to be... interesting to see how much a whitewash this is. So this is a game going back to just a shade. Well, okay, it was in January, a good few years ago now, right enough. But it was Hearts 6, Motherwell 0, and there were 6 different scorers in this game. As I say, at home, over to you. If it helps, it was in Robbie Nielsen's first term in charge.
Would you want the goal scorers, or are we just the full starting 11?
I did the full starting 11, bench as usual, and then take it for there. We'll see where we're at. You might also get a bonus point if I decide it necessary. If you can, when you mention a player, if you can say that they scored as well, then I'll give you 2 for it.
Principal Abin, Andy scored.
Andy who?
Principal Abin, and he unfortunately didn't score.
Who put penalties in? Because I'm sure we're the penalty in that game. Did we get to Gomez? Surely not.
I'm just gonna. Sorry.
Was it Cowden? Was it Cowden Beef? We gave him the sort of. Oh, we feel sorry for you. You've never scored the penalty.
10th goal or
something.
Aye, I'm sorry. No, he didn't give it. But you still get a point for the correct answer. So well done, Tam.
I don't want to just steal Corbett's answer either, so I'll go Jamie Walker.
Okay. Jamie Walker, no. Wasn't involved at all.
What a start. I kind of...
Wanma,
yes.
And he scored.
Well done. He was there and he scored. So, yeah, well done. He was a used substitute.
Damn. We will go with. Try to think. So scorers. I'll go Sam Nicholson.
Sam Nicholson.
Christ, no way.
Not involved at all. That. right, Corbett.
I can't even mind this game. I'm not gonna lie, to you. I've got no hope in hell.
How often do you win 6-0 at Tynecastle though, Tam? This is why I picked it. I was like, right, okay, it's still recent enough in your memory. Okay, put your hands where I can see them, because I'm not entirely convinced you're not cheating.
Could I be cheating with the answers I'm giving?
Well, I can't see your hands.
You don't want to see them.
Yeah. Perry Kitchen.
Perry Kitchen was not involved.
Why have I got this year wrong?
Well, do you want me to tell you the year? Right, okay, so it was in
January 2017,
no? It was in January 2016. Yeah, Hearts 6, Motherwell nil, Robbie Nielsen's first term, 16th of January 2016 is exactly when it was. So now we've got that out of the way. If I see your hands disappear out of the screen, I will deduct you a point. So, Tam, could you finish on negative points here if you're not careful. Right, so yeah, you're going back to January 2016. Corbett's 3-0 up, and just to remind you, Prince Babin, Juanma, and he scored, which Corbett correctly called. So there's still quite a lot of players to get. January 2016, who was your fave back then? Come on, Tam, you must know this. Hearts 6, Motherwell 0. There's not very often you're at Tynecastle and we win that by that margin.
Not very often I'm at take it now.
That's right. I don't know who Livy were playing that day, but actually, you know what? I'm going to make one of these a Livy game for a laugh and just see you wipe the flare with everybody.
I'll go Danny Wilson.
You will go Danny Wilson. No.
Danny Wilson that lifted the championship trophy on his last game for Hearts.
Is that his last game?
Oh, Callum Patterson.
Callum Patterson is correct.
Then you can say if I think he scored or not.
Well, I'd prefer you done it at the time rather than me telling you.
Sorry.
Andy
scored.
Yes, he did. Callum Patterson scored, correct. So that's 2 points for that. So it's Tam 0, Corbett 5. We could be going for a record score
can
here.
You at least try to get a player that played that, please. There's one.
Oh, no. Wait, you said Gomez earlier. I'll just say Gomez, please.
Wait a minute. What? Margaro Gomez?
He said Margaro Gomez.
No. Wasn't involved at all that day.
Oscar.
Yes, absolutely.
And he scored.
No, he didn't score.
Oh, boo.
Boo.
The only reason I can remember, there was the picture in the Daily Record had the 6 goal scorers, and I'm trying to remember what they all look like.
Right, Tam, come on. January 2016, you would be about like 7 years old or something like that. You're probably going to Hearts games at that age.
I was definitely going to Hearts games at that age.
Focus.
We would have had, I think, no, actually he's probably left.
Dead air is a prime time.
We'll go Billy King.
Oh, excuse me. Apologies in listener land. Yes, Tam is off the mark. Billy King. And no, he didn't score. Oh. No, he didn't score. Right, Corbett, your shot.
Blaise Augustine.
Correct. There you go. He didn't score either. Tam, over to you.
Palace Willis there last season.
That's your answer. It's fine, just say that the player that left in 2008.
Absolutely not.
Who was that other Spanish center? No. Something...
I know who.
Miguel Payardo.
Payardo, yes. Well done. The other Spaniard beginning with P. God, you're so xenophobic, Tam. That's shocking for you. Tam, back to you.
No, that was my answer, mate.
Yeah, no, but Corbett stole it as his answer, so it's back to you. So, I didn't want to dangle this in front of you, but come on.
No, don't give him any clues. It's funny.
No, he wasn't there. Oh no, shit. Oops, bleep it out. Steve Banks. Yes, he did play. Apologies, Tam.
Who did you say? Sorry,
Jordan McGee.
All right.
He was a used sub.
Did he replace Joan Oshinia?
I'll need to check. No, he replaced someone else, but you can get the point for Oshinia because he was an unused sub. So,
all right, okay.
Same thing.
Oh.
What's the other left back?
Just
Adam Eckersley.
Nope. He played for Hibs. Is it Kevin McHattie?
Kevin McHattie. No, Kevin McHattie was not involved.
Is that a season too soon?
No, I think he'd left by then, wouldn't he?
You're worried about the defenders. Well, think of the obvious ones. Like, who's the goalie?
No, don't tell him that.
Like, he's going to get it. He's like, oh, the goalie was such and such, and he scored.
Steve Banks. No. who
it's not
was
seriously
the goalie?
Your answer, is
oh,
it?
God.
No.
No, it's not.
The goalie was John McLaughlin.
Wasn't he John McLaughlin?
No, he wasn't. He wasn't the way. Was he not a Castro signer or something?
Don't know.
I'm going to go for someone else, though. I've messed up here.
It's Neil Alexander, then, if it's not John.
You're right. Actually.
Yes, go. Right. Well done, Corbett. And no, he didn't score. Neil Alexander.
Can I just end this and let Corbett answer?
Was Bjorn Johnson there? Did he play it this time?
No, he wasn't.
So were Connor Salmon and Tony Watt time?
No, they weren't involved.
They were the 2016 squad, so they must have been there, but just not played.
Maybe not played.
Who was the striker, though? If it wasn't
right, so we've got Neil Alexander. Patterson, Augustine, Oztark. We didn't have the left back yet. Who else? Who played midfield? Boabin.
Yep.
Who else played in that horrible midfield? Payardo. Wanma scored.
You mentioned Billy King as well. Do you want me just to tell you, because there's no way Tam can get this back?
Let me keep going.
Who started as
Robin Muirhead. Robbie Muirhead.
Yeah. No, it wasn't involved. Tough one, this, huh?
Who the hell else played then? Well, did we still have Trank, who was still there for the
There's a couple in here. When I say them, you're going to go, oh my God! It's so annoying that you never thought of them, but I'm confident you'll get there.
Left back was nearly like red at that point, was it?
Took once there, say again, Tam.
I said Reras, but Soa could be the shout for the left back as well.
Faisal Reras, no, not him.
Was it Leonard Soa? He was Cathro.
Wasn't he Lenny?
I hate when you make me do these teams that I absolutely despise.
That's not even a bad team, Daddy.
No, the team that stopped trying to finish second. No, don't tell me, because I'll be annoyed with myself. Right, so did we say Perry Kitchen, but he wasn't there?
Perry Kitchen is not involved.
That's so annoying.
How many more starters we got?
Sophie and El Hasnoy there.
No. Starters, you have four left to get, and then there are four subs. One of them used, one of them not. One of them used, the other's not. So yeah, four. I always say outfield players, four starters left.
Subkeeper would have been Hamilton. There you go.
Yeah, you can get that one time. Yeah. No, he didn't score. So you're not getting a bonus point for that either. Right, that takes you down to seven that you still need. And we might be here until 7 a.m. before anyone gets this. I'm just gonna have a look at the YouTube chat
I'm trying to think why I can't even remember who they are. I've got my timeline wrong.
Winger, striker, left back.
It's annoying me. Try to think who else should play.
Would you like me to tell you squad number? Would that help?
No.
It's probably not going to help, is it?
Was it that Adidas one with a weird collar? Is that the one, the top you're talking about?
No, it was a Puma top.
Right, okay.
It's a Puma top.
Aye, but I'm sure it was a Puma top that came down to like a V-neck. Like,
aye, it was pure horrible.
I hated the neck on that. I hated it, and yet it's hanging up pristine in my collection. See, when I die, by the way, I don't know who to leave these to, because the missus will just sell them, so they should go in a museum. I've got a lot of Hearts tops that are in very good nick.
You're way older than me, I'll take them.
Of course you will.
Surely right, the Don was Don Cowie there by then?
Yeah, Don Cowie, no.
Was he not Cathro?
I know better than to put a team in front of you that has Don Cowie in it, because you've got a nice new microphone there that won't you smash it off the monitor.
Why the hell? Why can I not get it? Was there like Jason Holt, Scott Robinson? Were, did they still kick about at Hearts at that time?
They all have been aye, surely.
Mm-hmm. Right, this is getting drawn out now, so I'm going to have to tell you. Right.
Either of those answers, though, no?
No. No. Okay. Right. So going through the starting 11, the gaps in it are the first one, number 18 that day, Igor Rossi.
Oh,
so why do we play three at the back then? If we played Igor Rossi then, because that's Augustine, Oztuck, and Rossi. So we must have played three at the back.
Right.
Sometimes Patterson played a bit further up though, didn't he?
Patterson a wee bit forward. Right. What is the number of the next guy? But don't tell me his name.
Number of the next guy was number 16. A Venga Boys song that rhymes with his name.
Oh, Arnaud Jume, yeah, bye.
Yeah, there you go, Arnaud Jume. After that, you have Gav Riley.
Who Gav Riley, that's Robbie Muirhead. That's who there was. I knew there was some shite, useless beep to Scotland that we signed for the Vida League that played every week and was terrible.
That's so like terrible. Love like My Chemical Romance or something. He was like some sort of MacGuff.
The main hitman, I suppose, who scored, was from Sweden. He earned us a bit of money, Osman Sow. Then he was still there.
I don't see him.
No, you didn't. No.
I thought it was a bit.
One of the used substitutes was Dario Zanata, the Canadian, making just his fifth appearance for Hearts at the time. And then the two unused subs, instantly forgettable, the 29-year-old Danny Swanson and the 19-year-old Robbie Buchanan. So that was a...
explained why I forgot about that team.
How did that team win 6-0?
Danny fucking Swanson in it.
Exactly. You got the goal scorers, just for anyone in listener land that cares who hasn't actually figured it out. It was Callum Patterson, Igor Rossi, Jume, Gav Riley, Osman Sow, and Juan Ma were the 6 scorers without reply on the day. So there you go. Six different scorers.
The problem is there, Corbett, that's the classic Robbie Nielsen team off playing no one in their actual position there, because try and work that out. We've got about 4 centre mids, 4 centre backs.
Danny Swanson is a Hibs rat and should never have been allowed in the building. So I hate that team.
Agree with that.
So,
that was.
Can give that moral victory to Tam. I was terrible though. That was the worst I've ever performed.
But you were terrible, but you still won 10-3. So that's.
I'll take 3 on the basis of my performance. So.
We'll consign that one to the history books. And you know what? I like it when I pick something difficult, but then also for engagement, probably should have picked something a little easier. But yeah, there we go. It's done now, and we'll have another one for you next week.
So you were editing this?
Yes, I am. So
I just cut that whole thing, man.
what I will do is I'll put this up so everyone can hear it ahead of the game. After the game, though, I'll take it down and I'll replace it with the bleeped out version, just so for money making purposes.
Okay, fuck.
Whoops!
Stop being a cunt.
I know, sorry. Oh, babe.
Right, Ryan Freighter does make a good point, by the way. Like, you could have done the Dundee game during the week, and I would struggle.
Fair. Well, we're coming on to Dundee right now because we're going to say, talk us through the starting 11 time.
Over to you. Go.
Are you being serious?
Yeah. Go. What was the starting lineup?
So obviously we played Dundee on Tuesday at Clancastle. This wee blast of games, the Tuesday, Saturday, Dundee and Aberdeen for me are the two biggest games of the season. We needed 6 out of 6. We sit here right now having 3 out of 3. Tomorrow, obviously, the opportunity to make it 6 out of 6. So, Dundee at home. Actually, try to think. I don't think we've got a very good record. We Dundee, but then. You could say that about literally every single team in the league this season that we've come up against. We've not got a very good record, but
I think we lost 3 in a row against Dundee or something, wasn't it? Leading up to this one.
I'll keep chatting. I'll check for you. Don't worry. Probably. That's why I'm here.
They beat us. Definitely beat us in
Dens earlier season.
And then they beat us at Tynecastle. In the season that we finished third, I think. Like 1-0 or something on like a crappy Tuesday night or something like that.
recent results are pretty crap, if I'm honest. So the last game we played, 27th of August, we got beat 1-0. Game before that, at Tynecastle, 9th of February, so nearly a year ago, it was a 2-1 loss. Before that, away was a 1-0 win on my birthday in 2021. Before that,
Jamie Walker scored in the Fog game, remember?
That's right.
That was, was that his 50th goal for Hearts?
Oh, I don't know. I'd have to check that.
I think he scored that at Newcastle.
If you look at the last 10 games, we have won 5 of them and lost 3. Won 5, lost 4, and then there's a draw. So it's fairly even Stevens in the last 10 matches, and that's going back to October 2018.
So, obviously, the game on Tuesday was massive. Made a couple of changes. Was there any changes to the team are starting 11 that threw you, or anything that stuck out before the game?
Yeah, for me, I'll be honest, after, I know you maybe shut it down a little bit in the group chat, but when Lembekiza came on against the Spartans, I'll be honest, you can tell when someone's got a touch and they're tricky, just by the way they sort of dance about. Then for him to be putting Lembekiza on for the start, I was like, I'm all for this. Like, I want to see how he does against somebody that, to quote Liam Corbett, isn't a team of painters, decorators and bus drivers, or whatever it was you say, whatever it was you called them. So I was curious to see how he would do against a team of so-called professionals. We'll get on to the game in more detail. I think his first 10, 15 minutes were a bit ropey, but after that he performed pretty well. So I was pleased to see him on the sheet.
Yeah, I was a bit of a shock to see Grant and Forrest not start, but I think that's probably more because I think both will start tomorrow. So it was maybe just Naismith has rested and rotated the team pretty effectively. So
I think it definitely changed when they came on as well. So
yeah, I think so.
Right, I think that. Yeah.
I think, well, one of the things I've noticed hasn't been sort of mentioned in the narrative of the first half is the fact that we pretty early on had a knock to Denham. He kind of played on for a bit, and then obviously the effect of the injury or whatever, seen him have to go off. Benny had an injury. Kingsley had a bit of a knock, and then obviously Cochrane just before half time took a knock as well, and I think that played its toll. I think the narrative of the match, especially the first half, there's 5 goals in the game and all of them coming to Gorgie Road end. And it was on the night where basically the whole of Scotland was told not to travel. You know, storm, whatever the hell it's called, was in full effect. And that was the first thing I noticed on Tuesday. We were shooting to the Roseburn end, as we always do traditionally. We had centre, worked it to where we have it, and then it made whatever it is. Dundee tried to clear it and it fell Kingsley's side. And now professional football players can misjudge things and make mistakes, but normally you're talking fractions, you know, you're talking millimetres, etc. Kingsley ran to head of the ball and then he didn't even jump, because where he went to for his highest point to time it to header it, the ball was just gone. And obviously the wind was just absolutely
too much travel.
It was just causing everybody a bother, and like clearances were coming back towards you, the ball was travelling further. Even there was a couple of times where the ball probably would have ran out, but it stayed in, and Dundee managed to sort of work it into a positive area or whatever. So there was no to get excuses, and Dundee have to play in it as well, and Dundee probably in the first half would have been very, very happy with the first half. They had a game plan and executed it. And Hearts, as we kind of touched on with the Spartans thing, were a bit possession for possession based, a bit lacking penetration and stuff, but obviously that's an unbelievable finish for Jordan McGee to make it 1-0. Can't really complain about that. I have a question for you, and it might be a bit out of order, but does Craig Gordon save that?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm in that camp as well, I think.
But the bigger questions have to be why 2 went to their number 9 or whatever, but
I think the bigger questions start with why does Vargas not just, just punt it up the park or put it out for a throw-in or whatever. He's 18 yards away from your goal and he's trying to beat 2 men or whatever. Bit of naivety from there. But you're right, when the ball breaks down, similar to the Rangers goal, when I blame Rowles for breaking out of position. Vargas breaks the structure of the team, and then you see it. Everybody shuffled over, probably one too many, and they don't cover back, which leaves the number nine guy pretty much on the wing by himself, and the rest is an unbelievable. It's a great finish. You can't take away from it. My thing with the Gordon thing, right, is that Gordon's really, really good at knowing what the striker's going to do before the striker even knows what they're going to do. Jordan McGee's got two options in that scenario. Yeah. One is to take a touch and see what happens, or it's to curl it into the corner, if you know what I mean. And I think Gordon prepares, and he's bigger as well. And I like Xander Clark. I've told you that before. I've warmed to Xander Clark. But both the goals, actually, I feel that maybe Gordon could have prevented them. But that's not to take it away, because minutes before Jordan McGee's, Xander Clark made an absolute wonder save for that header.
I agree with all that. The one thing I would say in addition to that is that Gordon is faster. Even though he's bigger and lankier and all that sort of stuff, I think Xander is, as much as a good keeper, and I do echo everything you're saying, I think Gordon, I don't know if it's just because he's got more of a big game mentality about him or whatever, he's faster to reach critical decisions than Xander Clark is. And and that's given his advanced years. He's however many years older than him, but he's played in so many hundred more games that are bigger and better. Then his match instinctive reaction sharpness, which is a thing I've just made up, is far better than Xander.
You are right to make it up, because actually we've got two top class players in our team right now. What, and you compare them to, so Boyce versus Shankland, Clark versus Gordon. You watch Boyce try and finish versus Shankland finish. Shankland's is instinctive. You know, he's doing it before and he doesn't even think about it. Do you know what I mean? He can do it, and then you step back and think, whoa, how did they do that? And he probably thinks, whoa, how the hell did they do that? Whereas you watch Boyce, everything he's doing, you think he has to think about what he's doing. He's got to think how to get there. Yeah. He's got to think what he's doing. And I'm a bit like that with Clark versus Gordon. Is Gordon's instinctive. Like, do you know what I mean? He just knows. He doesn't know how he knows, but he knows that that's what McGee does. So he probably reacts a wee bit quicker. Whereas I watch Clark and Hank, he's thinking through every single step that he's making, every move that he's making. Why have I just turned it into that song? Every step I take.
It's okay, we'll cut that bit out, man. It's fine.
We're in a great position for Hearts, given that the teams that we've just spoken about, you know, Bobby's, Lamal, Joel Pereira, etc., that we've got two very, very, very good goalkeepers in the side. But especially the second one, Tam, I think Xander Clark will look at that and think he should have done better. Now, Hart should have done better. It was an absolute travesty of errors until they scored, but it's not even that difficult a finish, if I'm being honest.
I agreed. It's one of those things that's just, as you say, write a goal that's just sums up everyone making a mistake, and it's pretty much there. It's not really worthwhile.
The other thing as well that no one seems to be talking about is the fact that it was Shanklin's fault. Yeah, he's my absolutely roasted Kai Rills for running out of position to try and win that tackle at Rangers. Lauren Shanklin tries a ridiculous little back heel flick thing for the throw-in, which results in then us kicking the ball up in the air and then it making its way over to the other side of the park. And Kent does rubbish, Dexter does rubbish, and Clark does rubbish. So, anyway. Yeah. Right, I'm going for a Tam. You just wait here.
Well, while we're still live, and see when you said a Tam, do you mean a Tom Kite, a shite?
I think it just means
is he away
I've got a
piss?
Weak bladder.
Oh, no, okay, fair enough. Well, there's a wee peep behind the curtain, guys. Normally we would cut this crap out, but because Corbett's already said fuck a bugger too many times, we're going to have to do an edit on this, so we can't really stop the tape rolling. But there's a good name for a show. Every Breath You Take. That's it. It's got to be that.
It's probably not. If you do want any questions, give us a wee shout. Not for us, because I can't even name a team to
Into the microphone like a big boy, Tam.
Sorry, it's just falling down.
Very quiet now.
It's like my life, it's just falling apart, to be honest. So.
Oh, fair enough, fair enough. But oh, here he is, he's back.
We've said nothing.
Oh my goodness, you said, sitting just staring at each other.
No, I abused Tam for a minute and said that every breath you take, that could be the show name. But that was it. That was a really quick piss. No prostate problems in your family.
Or drink is water, so that's all that comes in. But first half, what was your thoughts on the first half, Tam? Because obviously I've seen a bit of reactionary stuff around what happened in the second half and four at the back and a bit pant waiting for the first half. But what was your take on it? You obviously watched it on the TV, didn't you?
Yeah, I actually didn't think we started like particularly bad. I felt, as a lot of our goals this season, it has been individual errors. And I'm pretty sure before they scored their first, did we not have a really good chance just prior to that? And
well, Kingsley's absolute ridiculous miss for his header.
Aye, that's what I'm talking about. Exactly. So
in the 6 yard box, and the goalkeeper, and somehow manages to header it off a Dundee player and wide for a corner that they gave as a goal kick.
Yeah. Aye, exactly that. So it's one of those things, it's like narrative of the game completely changes because of the second half, but I think it wasn't as bad as some people said at halftime, realistically for me. But I am always known as a happy clapper.
It was bad. Like what we had seen was bad up until that point. I think don't want to get too much down a rabbit hole with it, but my question back, and sorry if you were going to ask this, Cor, but when you went at half time, what we'd seen was, I'll be honest, I wasn't enthused. I was raging at half time, and I thought, but still had the idea that we would come out of this and go on and do something.
There is obviously any Hearts team shouldn't be going in 2-0 doing it half time to Dundee at home, right? Let's get that out of the room, right? Take that as read. But actually, the performance was fine for me. Like we did okay in terrible conditions. It was chucking it down the ring. Wind was playing an absolute nightmare for everybody. And you know what it's like at Tynecastle. We miss a couple of chances. Vargas misses a chance. Shanklin misses a chance. Kingsley misses a sitter. Denham has to go off. Benny's got a knock. Cochrane gets a knock. Like all these things add up, and it's kind of what I was talking about there about the guys that were actually at Spartans versus watching on the telly. It was one of those things I said at halftime to the boys around about me that it was like, that, you know, what's weird is this is either going to finish 3-0 to Dundee or this will end up 3-4 or 5-2 to Hearts. Like there will be no in between here because we'd created enough chances and played well enough in spells in the first half that I thought if we get one, we'll go on and get more. You know what I mean? And you actually look at the second half, we've missed the penalty, we've scored 3 goals, Alan Forrest has a goal chopped off, Alan Forrest misses like a bit of an overhead kick type thing, right. Shanklin misses another chance that you'd expect Shanklin to have, then you look at things like Dexter getting the ball across the 6 yard box a couple of times with a couple of decent crosses, corners, like honestly it could have been so comfy for Hearts in the end if we took our chances. And I can't help but feel that somebody one day is going to get absolutely belted. We just talked there about we are 6-0 against Motherwell or whatever. Look at Livingston at home, we won 1-0, but it was one going on 5 or 6, do you know what I mean? Like it was that big a margin, if you know what I mean. And I feel that Dundee was kind of similar in that sense. Hopefully it's tomorrow via Aberdeen, but aye, it was a strange one, I know, in the ground that you're annoyed because you shouldn't be 2-0 down. Hearts side should be, but actually I was like, this, and I'm not going to talk about it because I jinxed it last year. I'm not going to talk about my feelings on this team and all that stuff, but we've got evidence now that this side's got a bit more balls to it than incarnations that we've seen previously. If you look at, we're 2-0 down at St Mirren last season in the top six and came back and drew 2 each, or 2-0 down at home to Ross County, come back and draw 2 each, and then obviously we're 2-0 down here and we'll come back to win. So
see, The bit that I was struggling to verbalise a minute ago was that I wasn't impressed with what I'd seen up until the point when we got to half time, but when we came out, it was a different beast. Now, I don't know, and even just going back to that game against Dundee, but whenever we've done stuff like this, it's always been on a central one big thing, one event that swings the game. Now, you have to look at what happens and what the setup is like before that event versus what the setup is like after that event. And for me, and I'm loath to say this, but because I like him so much, but Cochrane not coming back out for the second half then seems to have made a difference. And it defies logic because he's one of the best players that we've got. Yet, all of a sudden, they came out the second half. I don't know if it was because, whether it's Cochrane, they, you know, everything's changed ever so slightly, or if they were absolutely lambasted at halftime or whatever. He went in, gave them the hairdryer treatment, you know, whatever it might be. But there was an event that happened that absolutely turned the game. And then after that, there was no looking back.
I think it goes along with it. It's not so much Cochrane going off, but changing to the back four helped us massively because we were essentially matching up their back five wing-backs on each other, but then having wingers and basically wing-backs at that point, we were double up on their wing-backs, essentially. So that helped massively.
And the bit that's mental is that
Corbett does say that the weather probably has a massive impact on that pressure as well, to be honest.
You're right, but to that point, you've taken off arguably what is one of the best players in that squad, who's no longer involved.
So injured. So that was an impactful thing. That was it. He was injured. He took a knock. So it kind of played our hand to say, well, actually, we're not having any joy anyway. So we're going to move to the four, put Kingsley to left back, Dexter to right, Halkett Kent in the middle, and take Cochrane off, which absolutely helped. But you're right, you said, point to an event that changed the game. For me, the bit that changed the game were twofold, actually, because one, Dundee, for me, I don't know, I've not listened to any of their rhetoric after the game, so they may have explained why, but they took McCowan off number 17, which felt like a shutting of the shop. You know, we've got 2-0, get out of Dodge with that. But it coincided with Benny going off. Benny obviously took a knock and left and was replaced, obviously, by Macaulay Tate. But by this point, we also had George Grant on and Oda, and we'd started to grow into the game. I think that Vargas and Forrest played very well second half, stayed wide, stretched up a game, and then that allowed, when Macaulay Tate came on, it gave him the opportunity to actually get his head up and start playing forward passes into George Grant. George Grant, for me, the positions that we play, the formations that we play, sorry, and the way that we want to play, George Grant is essential for me. He has to play. He has to play in that bit because he's not only forward thinking, but he's very, very clever in the positions in which he takes up in the park and where he makes his teammates go in terms of passing. You know, Benny will pass straight to you. Grant will ask you a question. He'll put it in front of you, make you run onto it, and make you go into a space where you maybe weren't going to go yourself, and that made a difference. And the same with Macaulay Tate. So that for me was,
I think that actually, sorry to just jump in, but I think that's what kind of surprised me about the starting lineup. Obviously, you've got Beningame, Nunhoff, Denham. They're all kind of that similar sort of player. We needed somebody to bridge that gap, so Grant in there is ideal. I suppose obviously we've not got Lowry, who was the other one we were kind of using in that position, but I think if we are playing the five in midfield or three in midfield, however you put it, we do need somebody just to bridge that sort of 10 role and be in there. Whereas that's kind of a flat free what we started with, essentially.
And then another thing that happened that never, ever, ever happens, and is something that this podcast in particular has been shouting about for years upon years and years. The game changes by the fact that we have a midfielder that shoots from 20 yards outside of the box.
Madness.
And scores an absolute belter. I said on that Hearts standard with Joel Skid that they were like, you know, I prefer that we recycle the ball and try and play it out wide. And I was like, I am always 100%, 10 out of 10, every single time, shoot, because you can get deflections, don't know where they go. You can win corners, you can get free kicks, you can get deflections into the path of someone else. If you don't buy a lottery ticket, you can't win it. You've got to shoot. And what a finish for Nieuwenhof. And it's hopefully something that helps take him up a level as well, because I feel like he's probably needed something like that.
I think to your point, if you don't buy a ticket, you can't win it. Then the way he strikes that ball, it fools the keeper, but I think he just maybe slightly misjudges it a little bit, like in the sense that like any good keeper should be getting it for that distance, but it's one of those things that if they'd played it out wide to the right or the left, you're not in that situation. You're not forcing the keeper into the situation where he has to do something. He's been forced into a situation, misjudged it, great goal, boom, there we go, move on.
Yeah, I think the mad thing is, like, he's probably been in better positions. He has no right to take a shot there. Like, yeah, he doesn't, but he does, and he takes a go for it. And previously in the season, you've probably seen him at the edge of the box where he should be taking a shot. He's not, so fair play. I'm all for it as well. There's nothing better than seeing a 20-yard, 25-yard
another
goal.
Another thing that this podcast has bemoaned all season, and it would be remiss if I talk about it now, that's never a penalty for Hearts. That is a shocker intervention for VAR. That is an awful decision.
Oh, yeah, never.
It's never a penalty. We'll take it, like, but it's never a penalty. And if it is, you should get 40 penalties a game, because that happens all the time.
It was nice to Shankland to miss it, and just as good sportsman, like, but that was really good.
On that subject, right? So the standard of officiating midweek was terrible. Now, we're talking about the Halkett challenge, which I'm sure we'll come on to. The referee, correct me if I'm wrong, because I watched it on Hearts TV, but the initial feeling was, and again, I need you guys to clarify it, that the referee had actually awarded a penalty for that, and it's well outside of the box. Because the referee points to the spot, and then VAR says, actually, no, you're clowning, it's well outside, it's a free kick.
Another one, right, for me is he saves Vargas's blushes there, because that would have got chopped off. You know that chance where he should have scored and then it gets given as a foul? That was never a foul. That would have got given if he'd scored that.
Yeah. But that's the other thing that what I wanted to talk about was the fact that the referee seemed to be, like, that's not, is that, if that, unless that's a new rule and I've missed it, the letting play continue is only to be for offside decisions. You have to let the play go, right, and then VAR will intervene if it's offside.
Not, or it's an advantage situation, depending on who comes away with the ball. But if both players go to ground, there's no advantage. So,
and then
he
gave the free kick anyway. Do you know what I mean? Especially because the advantage should go to the team that's got the advantage. So there's no advantage to Dundee, and the foul was on Dundee.
Exactly.
So he shouldn't have played on. And then he gives a free kick, and I'm like, what the hell are you doing? He did it twice. There was another situation today where he did that, where he let play continue, and then the play stopped, ball went out, whatever it was, and then he gave the foul after. And I was like, what is he then? That's not the rule. And also,
there you go.
I was going to say, he booked Halkett for the challenge, didn't he? Because it was a penalty.
Halkett didn't get booked, actually. No, I was just looking at the booking, so.
Never got booked. Lembekeza got booked, but that was it.
Wow. Wow.
Exactly, yeah. But I thought there was eight bookings and one of them wasn't actually for that challenge, which is mental.
I thought he got booked because it was a penalty and he didn't want the double jeopardy thing. And then I thought he should have gave the free kick and then sent him off because there was no double jeopardy, if you know what I mean. But it was a shocker. It was a shocker as well. I know the VAR thing for their goal, it's on, like, for the offside or whatever, it's clearly onside or whatever. But even when they released the pictures of that, of the lines on VAR, I'm like, what he's doing, man? Like, just that's made me even more think, what? Where's that even fit?
It's apparently collaborated to the ground, and you're like, how is that calibrated when it's squid?
It's not.
And they measured it for like in that bit of his arm. And I'm like, what?
See, the thing is, right, if it's calibrated for the ground, either somebody, there's a couple of things have happened. Either somebody's moved the camera since it's been calibrated, in which case that's a big no-no, or somebody's went and redrawn the line squint, right? Uh-huh. So the groundsman hasn't changed the shape of the pitch, so that's no thing. It's absolutely shocking.
And let's also
there's a similar one in the the Rangers Hibs game last night.
Wednesday. It was a shocker as well. But the chances that anybody's calibrating in it, and it's none, considering that the big screens inside Tynecastle had the Hearts versus St Johnston game still up on the big screen. And I was like, what?
There was two Lauren Shanklins.
Two Lauren Shanklins playing. It was like the most random hanging in. Some of the substitutions were came up with the wrong names and all that sort of stuff. And I was like, what is going on, man? Just some night. But for that moment on, obviously, Shankland misses the penalty. Then
did it go as flat in the ground as it seemed to watching from home? Because it seemed like the atmosphere was really quite building.
Oh, right. I think the ball off the ground. No. What are you talking about?
It felt like everyone was behind it and we thought something was going to happen. And then the penalty, I thought it just kind of pulled it back a wee bit. But I don't know.
You miss a penalty. It doesn't really matter now, does it? Nobody really cheers, do they?
To be fair, and the stadium was empty, mate. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, the world had been told not to come outside. Pissing with rain, wind howling, you're getting beat, your Tyler's man's just missed a penalty. Like, they can get away with that. But I think from that point, like I said, I knew, it sounds really easy to say now in hindsight, but as soon as we got one, I was like, well, we won't get beat here. Like, we won't get beat. And obviously, Dexter had been brilliant. I think we missed it in the first half. What I liked about him, I found it insanely frustrating, but no so much from what he was doing, just more from the fact that actually, we're not that team. And if actually we were that type of team, he's put in some really good crosses and there's no one there. Like, he was putting the ball into the box, taking his man on. He was trying to do different things. He was trying to get to the byline all the time. And he was putting balls in, crosses in, and there was literally no one else there.
See that, right? That I'm all for it, because he was shelling them in like it was like mortar fire, right? Like, it was well good. But we've not had that for such a long period of time. It's going to probably take maybe a game or two for everybody to adapt to that actually being a thing. My big worry is, and again, I'm doing the Hearts thing, which is we've only got this guy on loan. I bet he's going to turn out to be absolutely class and brilliant at this, and then we'll have to send him back home the end of May, and it'll just be a complete pile driver.
The thing that we've got is at the end of the game, he looked like he'd never played in a stadium like it. He looked unbelievably buzzing. He came right over to the ultras, and he looked, had the time of his life. And I was like, mate, this is a Tuesday night, pissing rain. There's about 11,000 folk here. Like, wait until Saturday when it's actual bouncing, and wait till next season where you potentially got Europe and stuff again. It's smart from Hearts. It's how we won the heart of Cochrane. It's what we tried to do with Sims. It's what we tried to do with Hill, etc. So if he does come, we fall in love with him, then, you know, we're in a much healthier bargaining situation to try and get these guys to stay, given that there is European football, or you go back to playing under 23s in empty stadiums or in the fucking dog shit League Two or whatever it is. So, but I thought he was brilliant. I thought he was great. And the thing I liked the most about him as well is the fact that his goal was brilliant. You know, he comes in, brilliant play for Forest. On the other side, thinks it to the back post, and he's come in and he's got his goal and took it brilliantly. So I thought
it's intelligent finish. He knows exactly what he's doing. He doesn't panic. He doesn't snatch at it. He just knows exactly what he's doing. Boom, there you go. Sound.
And the thing that, but I don't know if it's picked up as well, but you know, there'll be Hearts fans that Lauren Shankland was clearly furious with himself on Tuesday. He kind of clapped and scurried down the tunnel in a half or whatever. But what people are only talking about is when Neuenhoff scored, Shankland was the first person in the net to get the ball back up onto the centre circle. When Dexter scored, he ran away celebrating, and Shankland was straight into the net, get the ball, get going again, if you know what I mean. And then obviously when we score the winner, he's run away celebrating to the other side, doing his own wee celebrations or whatever. And there are wee things like that you kind of, you don't pick up on the telly, but make a difference. You know what I mean? Like, he's a captain, he's a leader. He knew that the thing that I liked the most is 2-2, having been 2-0 down, you're maybe thinking, we've got to dodge here, that let's settle for that. But the team was like, no, we're not settling for that. Like, we need to win these games. So I quite liked that. Other things I liked in the second half, I thought, like I spoke about there before he went off, Vargas. and Forrest made a massive difference. Fargas was starting to rinse his man on the outside and get to the byline, and then Dexter being on there as well, going by him and putting balls in, and it caused Dundee no end of problems. And then obviously Oda came on, and you forget how rapid Oda is. Mm-hmm. Like, he is proper fast. And Tagawa and Oda really struggled at Spartans. I didn't think either of the two of them had a good game. But there's something about Oda that I like. I don't know what it is. He scores goals and he tries. And I really like...
I wish he would use that pace more often, though, and actually take on the man. He just needs a bit more, I don't know. Vargas doesn't mind just trying anything, and Oda always goes for the pass.
It's different because there's two different types of players. So, for example, Forrest, if you give him the ball to his feet with space to run into, he likes that. Whereas Oda, if you put the ball in front of him and make him chase it, he's great at that. Like, do you know what I mean? Because he's already gone full pace, and it's that you get different types of players. Do you know what I mean? If you've given Oda, and Oda gets back to the goal, take a touch, he's got a man straight up his arse, he's probably 9 times out of 10 going to take a touch and just put it back to where he got it for, because it's not how he plays. Whereas if actually you put the ball in front of him and he's chasing the guy, or he's in a foot race with the guy, or he's, then that plays to his strength. So thought Oda played well. I won't lie, where I sit row 4 or something behind the goal, as soon as he hit the shot, the ball immediately went over like the height of the crossbar, because I'm in line with the crossbar, and I was like, oh, that's not going in. But then it just like dropped into the net, and I was like, superb.
Did it take a deflection?
Yeah, it took a deflection.
I was going to say, it's really, it's like you guys, obviously where you're at, seeing it live, all the replays that they showed on Hearts TV, again, I've not seen it on Sky Sports or whatever, it looked like it took a deflection, but there was never really much nodded to that effect. But I was going to say, you'll know right away. When you see it live, instinctively, you know. But
you'll know the way he shot, it was more like a low trajectory thing, and then it's hit and it's looped like that.
Over the top of his foot or someone's foot, and then it's just the spins.
So for him to have done that, where he was shooting, he would have had to have dinked it. Like, do you know what I mean? He would have had to try to chip the keeper, and he never chipped the keeper. He put his laces through it, so it's hit someday and looped over a bit.
It's spin. Yeah,
fair enough. Great. But again, it was one of those ones where we've spoke before. If Hearts had played an extra 10 minutes in that game, and I know there was 8 minutes of injury time, but Hearts were the only team going to score. I thought Hearts were, other than Halkett's sort of brain fart, Hearts were really, really good in the second half. And I put it down to, folk can say that it was because we went to 4 at the back. I actually just think it was this team's got a bit about it now. And I think it was just like, nah, this isn't happening. Like, we're not going to, it's not good enough for where we're at.
One thing I was quite pleased about was that much debated stat in the WhatsApp community chat finally came good, which is
the thing that you've been sitting on for about 2 years.
Aye, Hearts being 2-0 down and then coming back to actually win a game, first time since September 2002, I think it was. But finally that stat actually comes true. So see what the next big one is that I can produce. Hopefully, well, we then have to go 3-0 down and win 4-3, because that's just going to do my nerves nae good.
I think the last person we talk about that we already touched on there, but it was great to see this, just how much of a positive impact McCauley Tate had on the game, because he was absolutely superb.
Yeah. You know what? I just really like when a young player, and you can tell a young player is really good when they can just do the basics very well. Like, he wasn't doing anything outrageously brilliant or anything that, but the confidence to take the ball, pass the ball, at pace, and it was a forward pass every time. It's great to see.
I hate comparing it to it, because we've bashed him a couple of times in here or whatever, but you look at McCauley Tate versus Keogh, right? McCauley Tate's 18 or whatever he is. He was shouting, demanding the ball off everybody round about him. Keogh used to wait for the ball to go out and then point to be like, oh, how come I didn't get it? You didn't get it because you're a shite bag and you're hiding. That's why you didn't get it. You know, this young boy is saying, give me it. And he's taken it in dangerous areas, different difficult periods of the game as well. You know, you lose the ball in Dundee, go break and score. like what happened with Denham with the free kick and stuff at Dens Park. You know, I was really impressed with Macaulay Tate.
If you look at Denham and Tate, do you think there's a potential for the next Aaron Hickey-esque style player if we look after them?
If we give him the opportunity, he's definitely got potential to fit into that space in the park. Weirdly, though, I wouldn't play them tomorrow.
Yeah, not against Graham Cheney, for example, first half.
I think you're right.
Well, it's one of those things that you didn't want to kill them. If they make mistakes that cost us, it's such a big game. And they might thrive in it, actually. You know, it's a double-sided sword in it. You never know. You could come on in a high-pressure game and absolutely love it and smash it and do unbelievable. Or you could be the guy that makes the pass that, you know, they score for you that, you know, changes the narrative of the season. Because we'll come on in a minute, we'll round up Dundee and we'll come on to talk about Aberdeen. But yeah, tomorrow is massive. It's season defining for me. So it'll be interesting to see what Naismith does in that space. But I thought Macaulay Tate was brilliant. And again, I'm a massive fan of Denham as well. I really like Denham.
On that, by the way, we used to give Nielsen Peltors for it, but to see even Wilson on the weekend there, Tate and Denham, that's you can see, and the young boys on the bench, it's good to see them actually coming through. And it shows that we might have something, which is good, because we've not seen it for a long time.
They've got to be good enough, though. I don't want it to just be a token gesture or whatever. They have to be ready and they have to be good enough. I think Wilson came on at Spartans because that's where the B team play in it. They play there, don't they? And I think he just scored like a hat-trick or something in the last game he played there. So I think he comes on for that. But certainly from Denham and Tate, they've now had more than a couple of chances. Obviously, that's Tate's third game or whatever it is, and he's impressed in them all. So yeah, it's good. Bodes well for the future. But again, it's got to be justified. They've got to be good enough.
I think I want to bring this up.
Tick boxes, eh?
But I'm going to. Who was it that made the mistake against Dundee earlier in the season? Was it Denham? Denham. Right, okay,
it was Denham, mate.
Cool. That's fine.
To be fair, he has put that in the bin since then. He took a wee bit of time out of the team and he's done well.
So. Put it in the bin. Let's never mention it again. Just from all knowledge. Couldn't remember who it was.
Right. Anything else to the Dundee game that caught your eye that you just wanted to talk about?
Yeah.
We praise the manager. We've caned him enough. I thought his substitutions, his tactics, I'm actually starting to listen to him and agree and see what he's saying, if you know what I mean, which I'm very, very nervous about because I didn't do that with Hearts manager, so I'm not going to talk too much about it. But
I've got a question.
Go.
Did he clap the fans?
I wasn't paying attention. I never paid attention to that.
Fucking, but that's the final thing that he needs to do.
You can do that.
That's just so stupid, right? It aggravates me. See, just because I think it was you actually that brought it up. It wasn't a social media thing. It wasn't a group chat thing. I'm sure it was you that brought it up. And see, since it's been brought up, it's like if I tell you not to think of a pink elephant, what pops in your head? A pink elephant. Yeah. And now someone's mentioned it, I can't help but pay attention to it. But then I'll be honest, I missed the final few seconds of the game on Tuesday, so I didn't see if he clapped the fans. But it is excuse me, it's something that I'm looking out for now because it does start to wind me up.
He just doesn't walk around and clap the fans. Like he'll clap the fans for the dugout and then just leaves. But
everyone wants that Ronnie Dyler thing to come up every game and like. But you're right though, in terms of him, he's got a habit of this recently, not recently but this season. The changes he makes is good. Some, if they're cynical, would say he probably should have set up like that, but he views the game and sees the changes he needs to make and it usually makes us perform better. So fair point.
Cost us the Edinburgh derby, so like I said, I won't talk about that just yet. We'll wait till he finishes third and then he'll get my praise. So talking of tomorrow, Aberdeen at home, what do you expect, Tam?
As much as they're on a tough streak, I think it's going to be a tough game. I will be interested to see if we do go to a four at the back or stick with the Five, stick with five, you reckon? Aye.
100%. They won't change it.
If Cochrane's out, though, do you reckon he would? Because no. Whatever centre-half would play Civic, probably.
No, I think Cochrane's out.
Oh, is he not? Okay, sorry. Apologies. I thought there might have been some questions over that. But yeah, I think it'll be very similar in terms of team. Vargas will probably play alongside Shankland. Would be good to see Grant Forrest maybe, so actually Vargas might not really play. But it'll be a tough game. I think it could be one that we could end up winning by quite a lot if everyone goes right, but I think it will actually be tough, so we'll see.
So you literally said nothing there.
Yeah, I said it could be hard. It could be.
You've went on an absolute roundabout of nonsense.
That shows that I think they are no very good, but Aberdeen that is. But I just think they might up their game a wee bit tomorrow, because Robson, I don't know how long he gets if he gets beat tomorrow.
Well, especially when their next game, or they've got the Old Firm in their next run of fixtures. So. Andrew, what's your thoughts for tomorrow then?
Well, come on to my score prediction, I suppose, in a second when we do it. But if I'm being, pretend the microphone isn't on, sorry, and it's just us three chatting, I would say I'm a little bit nervous about it. But if I give my head a shake and think about things realistically, I'm not. It's my superstitious nerves that are getting towards me. For the match tomorrow, I think on paper we don't have anything to worry about. I think Aberdeen are a terrible team. They are very, very inconsistent, and if you have a look at what was it someone called them in the group chat, I can't remember, was it
Barry Bin Laden?
That's it, Barry Bin Laden. I was gonna say it's borderline offensive, but it's hilarious. All his rhetoric that a couple of days ago in the media saying, "Oh, I still fancy us for third place." What are you talking about? What are you talking about?
Don't say it just yet.
No, I know, but that's exactly. I'm trying to bite my tongue slightly. But exactly, it's all just bluster. It feels like it's like a dying man's handshake. It's nonsense. Then on paper we should dismiss them, nay bother, and I've got nothing but full confidence. But my little superstitious element is eating away at me, going, shit, I'm actually a bit nervous about it.
Well, we were in this stage this time last year.
Yep.
We are actually, the points are the exact same, but we went there 7 points in front. We went to Pittodrie in the third game before we would play them in the split, so our third fixture against them in the season. And, you know, you win, you close, you make the gap 10, you lose, the gap comes 4. And it's the same, exact same now. I think if they win all their games in hand and everything said and done right now, they'd be 7 points behind us. So, you know, they win tomorrow, takes them to 4. We win, takes us to 10. The difference this season is obviously they won like 6 or 7 on the bounce as we lost 6 or 7. I touch with this. I don't think we'll go the rest of the season unbeaten. Of course not. But I don't see us losing 2, 3, 4, 5 games in a row. We lost to Rangers and then Aberdeen, and now we've went 4 or 5 on the spin. So it's a big moment for Hearts tomorrow. Big moment for Stephen Naismith in terms of, you know, what we've said loads of times about Hearts is just go out and get the job done. Like it's our hardest thing to do. When we're supposed to do what we're meant to do, we struggle. But so it'll be interesting to see how we approach tomorrow. I'd like to think that we'd be up for it a little bit.
It's one of the ones for. I don't think it's win or bust. If we don't win tomorrow and perish the thought that we don't, it's not a disaster. However, if you look at how Aberdeen struggled against St Johnstone in midweek, they've got another, what was it, 3 games in hand, I think you said?
Yeah.
They've got another 3 of those games that they're going to have to play, right? And Aberdeen, unfortunately, or fortunately for us, unfortunately for them, can't be relied upon to go and actually get results in those games. So I don't think, genuinely, we've got that much to worry about. Even if the result doesn't go our way tomorrow, it's still not a disaster. However, I do think that we will win.
But it goes into that bit where you can kill them dead tomorrow. If they win tomorrow, then suddenly their game's in hand, they've got a bit of a bounce because they know, the more we win these games in hand, the more it puts pressure on us, you know, and we go to St Mirren next, or we go to wherever it is, we're at Dundee again in like a week or something, you know, suddenly those games start to be tighter and mean more. Whereas if you go open 10-point gap, if they win all their games in hand and they drop points in those, the gap gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and the pressure's all on Aberdeen, if you know what I mean. So we're a bit of a sliding doors moment. We had this last season. Be interesting to see how this the side adapts to it and kind of hopefully puts them to bed. Right, time for predictions. Thomas, what is your score prediction?
So what did I say? It could be 1-0 either way now. From the rubbish I spoke earlier, I think 2-0 Hearts.
Ando?
Same, 2-0 Hearts.
Okay, I'm going Desmond. I think it'll be a draw. I think it'll be a cagey. But I think it'll probably be a draw, would be my guess. Cool. Right.
Okay.
We'll try pod Sunday, back to normal. Friday night podcasts. Probably not for us. Let's do Sunday.
Sunday, my nerves are probably better on a Sunday. Everything's in the rear view. I'm not, like, I don't know. I've got a lot of stuff on this weekend. I'm like, nervous about the whole thing.
This time on a Friday, my brain has functioned it. Right. That's it. It's done.
Yeah, we've noticed. It's fine. Right. Thanks to everybody. Thanks to everybody on YouTube as well for getting involved. We appreciate it. We'll have this one up for you guys that don't join the lives and want to have a listen to a podcast, and then we'll tidy it up and put you a proper podcast out so that you can get it on Monday and we don't sound like slavering idiots. Well, we do, but we'll be slightly better sounding when we take out all the nonsense that we talked. So, boys, thank you. I'll see you all on Sunday.
See you in a bit.
See you.
Cargo. What a beautiful day.